നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. റീഡിംഗ് ഫ്രോം ഭഗവത്ഗീത ആസ് ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് ചാപ്റ്റർ നമ്പർ 14 ടെക്സ്റ്റ് നമ്പർ 7. ത്രീ മോഡ്സ് ഓഫ് മെറ്റീരിയൽ നേച്ചർ. രജോ രാഗാത്മകം വിദ്ധി തൃഷ്ണാസംഗ സമുദ്ഭവ തന്നിബധ്നാതി കൗന്തേയ കർമ്മസംഗേന ദേഹിനാ രജോ. ട്രാൻസ്ലേഷൻ ആൻഡ് പർപ്പോർട്ട് ബൈ ഹിസ് ഡിവൈൻ ഗ്രേസ് എ സി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longing. O son of Kunti, and because of this the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive actions. Purport. The mode of passion is characterized by the attraction between man and woman. Woman is attracted for man and man is attraction for woman. This is called the mode of passion. And when the mode of passion is increased, one develops the hankering for material enjoyment. He wants to enjoy sense gratification. For sense gratification, a man in the mode of passion wants some honor in society or in the nation. And he wants to have happy family with nice children, wife and house. These are the products of the mode of passion. As long as one is hankering after these things, he has to work very hard. Therefore, it is clearly stated here that he becomes associated with the fruits of his activity and thus becomes bound by such activities. In order to please his wife, children and society and to keep up his prestige, one has to work. Therefore, the whole material world is more or less in the mode of passion. Modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of mode of passion. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness. If there is no liberation for those in the mode of goodness, what to speak of those who are entangled in the mode of passion? Om Agya
Rajo Ragatmakam Vidhi Trishna Sanga Samudbhavam Tannibhnati Kaunteya കർമ്മസംഗേന ദേഹിനാം.
The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longing. O son of Kunti, and because of this the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive actions. Someone said that tiger is the national animal, therefore there is a lot of terrorism. If it is cow, then there will be a lot of sattvagun. Like Srila Prabhupada mentioned that there are three animals who are like gates for a human form of life. There is a cow, there is a tiger, and there is a monkey. These three living entities, they make a gate through which a human being can come. Those who are in the mode of goodness, they come from the cows, because in the Vedic philosophy there is a concept of reincarnation. There is a concept of, very simple explanation is given. Just like there is Sunday, the Monday has to come. You don't have to have a science behind this. This is a cycle. So similarly, if someone says human life is the only life we have, we don't become anything other than human being, and we only once come here and there is no more birth, that makes little chance for someone to rectify the mistakes what he does. That makes for a living entity a limited situation. Just like someone cannot afford to live in some place because of whatever reason. If you say, okay, this is the only place you could live, otherwise you can't live anywhere else, it's suicidal. The material nature, the very government, or our own decisions allow us to change. If I can't stay in Bombay, okay, let me go and stay in Pune. If I can't stay in Pune, go and stay in some other place. From Bombay, people shift to New York also. From New York, they go to some other place. So similarly, if one can do that, flexibility is provided in this system, what to speak of the subtle system. The subtle system also provides that facility. So therefore the concept of three modes of material nature is unknown to the scientist, unknown to the modern philosopher, unknown in any other scriptures also. That's a special contribution of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. The concept of three modes of material nature is such a precise and very fascinating one. You can analyze yourself, you can analyze the world, you can analyze everything based upon three modes of material nature. Sattva-guna, Rajoguna and Tamoguna. The music, one's resting, one's eating, one's talking, one's interacting, one's color, one's walking, everything could be analyzed by the principle of three modes of material nature. That's a special contribution of the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. While Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, nowhere you don't find the concept of three modes of material nature is absolutely unknown. So therefore, a very powerful observation, like when you have a cow, today Madan Gopal Prabhu gave a very brilliant lecture, and I was reading that how you make a tiger, what does tiger denote? Tiger does not denote affection. Tiger denotes terror. The tiger is waiting to pounce. Like Srila Prabhupada said, that saap lekhi bag dekhi. If the snake has to bite you, if it is there in your destiny, then you'll be bitten by a snake. Otherwise, the snake may crawl over your body and you may not be bitten by the snake. Saap lekhi. It has to be in your destiny. But bag means tiger. Bag dekhi. If the tiger sees you, that is your destiny. He will pounce upon you. It is standing to pounce. The whole system of that living entity is action. Tiger denotes action. And tiger and cow denotes affection. So therefore, this whole concept of three modes of material nature, unless one understands this principle of three modes of material nature, one's advancement in the science of spirituality will never come. One's understanding changes. Somebody said, this was, since Prabhupada is talking about attraction between man and woman, is the underlying principle of mode of passion. A strong attachment, and that attachment leads to extension of materialism, deeper expansion of materialism. Like someone said, one very famous French prostitute, she prayed to Mother Mary, "Oh Mother Mary, just like you conceived without sin, let me sin without conceiving." What does it indicate? The change of modes. When somebody is in the mode of passion or ignorance, then he cannot think from the point of your mode of goodness. What is sin? What is the feeling of sin? One is the written verdict in the scripture. This is sin, this is not sin. Another principle of sin is most important, is the feeling. Oh, this is sin. I can't do this. So therefore, more than the written verdict, the feeling based upon which mode you are in, that is considered good or bad. For someone in the mode of ignorance, or somebody in the mode of passion, for him not going to party is a sin. For someone who is in the mode of goodness, even thinking about sinful activity is a sin. For him to think, oh, why can't I do like this? Oh, how can I think like this? This is sin. So the Vedic literature, they define the principle of good or bad, not based upon the action. Of course, yes, there are the law books like Manu Samhita, which goes, speaks very clearly. Do this, don't do this, this is sinful, this is not sinful. But the higher Vedic literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, what do they do? From their point of view, it is the experience of the heart. For someone who is in the path of devotional service, one who is practicing Krishna consciousness, one is trying to remember Krishna, one is trying to remember the Lord and His pastimes, for him not to remember Krishna is a sin. Not to remember Krishna. For how long? Even to forget Krishna for a moment is a sin. So the definition of sin is not based upon action, it is based upon your level of purity. And therefore the three modes of material nature are very important to understand. Unless this 14th and 17th chapter studied properly, anyone who is practicing, we go to the temple for what? One goes to the temple to experience peace, at least minimum. When people come to the temple, tormented by the outside world, they sit for a few minutes, you know, close their eyes and breathe back and forth a little bit. Nowadays you don't get such temples also. Temples are also like malls only. And then people go to some temples where they hope that their desires will be fulfilled. Many temples, people go to Shirdi, people go to Siddhi Vinayak. So does that temple create the mode of goodness? No. That is the place where limitless desires are expressed by the worshipper. He is extending his hands as long as possible and is begging, give me this, give me this, give me this. So wherever there is longing, as Prabhupada says here, longing and desire is the sign of passion. You are going to the temple, but what does it create? It creates the mode of passion. You are standing in front of the Lord, but you are not being freed from material desire. You are not being freed from the restlessness or rest which is causing within your heart. Rather, you go to express it as strongly as possible, hoping that the object of your Lord will fulfill all the wishes. That becomes the mode of passion. Someone who may go to the forest, usually it is said that forest is the place of goodness. But then in the forest also people go for hunting. That's again in the mode of passion, where there is hankering, there is a longing to enjoy, entertainment, sports. In the Vedic time, there is no question of sports. You would not have a sports event. Like in the match where the Pandavas had achieved success in their education, there was something like convocation ceremony. Convocation ceremony is not handing over the certificates there, actually exhibiting your power. So all the important people had gathered and the Pandavas and the Kurus were exhibiting their power. It was not a competition. It's an exhibition. Neither the Pandavas made money out of this, nor the organizer made money out of that. And when Karna came to present, he was stopped. Why? Because it is not only the ability. It is not the capability to exhibit. Rather, your background is important. Why are you exhibiting it and what is the purpose behind whatever you do? Nowadays we see everybody, the whole concept in the present material world, the modern world, is the concept of, first of all, people don't understand the difference between passion, goodness and ignorance. It's hardcore materialism, place where you make money. Therefore we see the jobs which are in the mode of goodness, like becoming school teacher or becoming a professor in the college. Private tuition, that's a different thing. They make more money than some big people also. Somebody was saying a teacher makes 2 crore rupees. In the Vedic scripture, it is explained a teacher a medical doctor, anybody who's doing, anyone who's in the service industry, a service industry means you are taken care by the government. You cannot take salary. A person who is working in the service industry has to minimize his bodily needs. Why he has to minimize his bodily needs? If he doesn't have a time to serve others, all of his time is occupied in taking care of himself. How can he serve the society? So therefore, it was utmost important for someone who is doing service to the society to remain in the mode of goodness. When you remain in the mode of goodness, naturally the hankering and longing is not there. One experiences the feeling of contentment. I am satisfied. Prabhupada told that story of a teacher in Krishnanagar. He had many students. Many students would come to learn from him. 200 years back in India, when Madan Gopal was speaking about cows, for most of us, for most people, they say, what is this? You know, it's talking about Latin and French. You know, how can we do this? How can we give up paste? How can we give up cosmetics? How can we do this? How can we do that? But 200 years back, this was a normal practice. That was you don't have to give a seminar on cow protection. You don't have to give a seminar on how to use cow products. There's no need, because that was a part of every Indian's life. It is said, in Bengal, for one person, the ratio was 1 person, 10 cows. That was the ratio. There is one man, then compared to that, there will be 10 people. And because of that, when you are living with a very natural setting, you are hankering, you are longing, your desires are minimized. You become satisfied. And the principle of mode of passion, what does it do? The nature of mode of passion is never to make you satisfied. You can never be happy. There is no limit. If you have this much, it is not the money what makes you happy. It is the modes. That's a very interesting point which Krishna speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. Ask anybody, one who has got unlimited money, is he satisfied? Does he have no hankering? If he is on the top, if he is the world's richest person, you don't find him sitting and chanting or doing meditation. You're not saying he should chant Hare Krishna. He will not do that. But does he sit and meditate? Does he say, I'm content? When he's first, he's struggling and striving to maintain that position. There is a longing and there is a desire that I may not lose this post. And someone who's come second, he will not see there are billions of people who are less than me. That is mode of goodness. If he can see there are billions of people who are less than me, that is mode of goodness. Rather he sees, here is this guy, he is an obstacle to me. If I can cross him, then I will become the richest person. Longing. And one who is in the first position, he is longing that this may not come, this person may not come. So, the whole point what we are making is, the gunas, the modes, whether you come to spiritual life or you are in the material life, as long as we allow the modes to affect us, the passion and ignorance, the longing will not go. The real longing has to be applied in regards to increasing devotional service. We discussed this many times. That when nobody complains about not getting time to chant more rounds. People don't say, no, I don't get to chant. People complain about certain physical things. I didn't get this, I didn't get that one, I didn't get this cloth. Why? Because the nature of mode of goodness is to, the whole principle of mode of goodness is that the contentment. I am satisfied with this. And that's what the modern society will not want you to do. How can you be content? There has to be unlimited longing. If there is unlimited longing, and then one can sell you anything and everything. You can buy anything, just like small children. If the guy is walking in the train selling some you know, stupid items. And what does the child do? Longing. I want that. And the parents buy it. And then within 5 minutes, another hankering comes. Because the mode of passion is, there is a lamentation caused by, you know, expectations are there, but their expectations are not fulfilled according to my terms and condition. Then there is a lamentation. Wish this was like this. Wish this was like that. When you don't have a cycle, you want a cycle. When you have a cycle, you want a scooter. When you have a scooter, you want a better scooter. When you have a better scooter, then you think, wish I could get four-wheeler. When you get a four-wheeler, then you think, why this one? Why not that one? When you have that one which you are desiring, then you expect this one. When you get that one also, you may have 20 cars, you may have 30 cars. That will not satisfy, because the car doesn't have the ability to satisfy. Because what is it? It's a dead matter. How can a dead matter satisfy? A dead matter cannot satisfy. Why we are not satisfied? The mode of passion is being affected. And where does the satisfaction come? The satisfaction comes from the mode of goodness. Like Socrates. One may say, what is it? There is no drive only. Where is the drive to win? Where is the drive to achieve? What was his drive? He would stand outside the shop and look around people, you know, wanting to come to buy something. He said, I'm watching, people are buying so many things which they don't need. Now what is it? That is his mode of goodness working. That is his perception. The perception of mode of goodness is making him feel that this thing I don't need, this thing I don't need, this thing I don't need. And the mode of passion, the whole shop, he'll say there is only these many items. I need more items in these shops. And mode of ignorance, when the mode of passion makes one frustrated, because the material world works in the principle of limited resources and unlimited desires. Mode of passion means, you know, limited resources are pounced upon by unlimited people and with their unlimited desires. But mode of goodness means what? Mode of goodness means unlimited people and unlimited people. Limited people, unlimited resources. Unlimited resources are there. For example, there are 5 people in the mode of goodness. And there is unlimited, plenty resources for them to enjoy. They will distribute to others. That is mode of goodness. Again, mode of goodness means unlimited number of people. They are in the mode of goodness. Limited resources, still they feel the resources are unlimited. Why? Because there is contentment. No, I don't need this. I don't need this. I don't need this. If there are 1,000 people who are in mode of goodness and there is a limited resource which is meant only for 5 people, what will be their observation? Their observation is that, you know, there is too much here. I can share with others. So therefore, the gross calculation what we make in this world and feel, okay, if I get this much, that means mode of passion. According to Krishna, you can never be satisfied. You can never be satisfied. So what does he say here? What does the Lord is talking about? He is talking about our achievement should be based upon the gunas. If we can achieve the mode of goodness. Nowadays, like somebody came to talk to one devotee. And what is the problem? The problem is that their child does not want anything. He is happy and content. And others are saying there is a psychiatric problem. How can he be such? You know, there is no drive only. He doesn't have the killer's instinct. He doesn't ask for anything. There is no hankering. There is no lamentation. He doesn't want anything. So they have to take him to the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist will say, okay, you know, this is how you have to work hard. To come to that same rat race of mode of passion, hankering, lamenting, desires, not fulfilling the desires, frustration. No. acting passionately. Develop the mode of passion. So therefore, you can imagine, I am studying Ramayana, that somebody is in the mode of passion, the desire of controllership, I am the doer. One who learns the, one who lives a life of too much of independence because of unlimited resources he has, the power of money, the power of position, the power of wealth. So they approach God as if they are doing some favors to God. No, I come because I need to come, I need to give money. Krishna explains this also in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Ishwari Bhav. Ishwari Bhav means what? That I am the doer. I give charity. I give charity to this person, I give charity to that person, I give charity to Krishna also. I give charity to Narayana also, I give charity to Tirupati also. There is a concept of Ishwari Bhav. And such people, because of that Ishwari Bhav, the proprietorship mentality, the controllership mentality, for them to perform sinful activity and justify it is no big deal. Killing the animals, performing all kinds of sinful activity and not feeling. Worship of God involves what? Trying to be helpless. It goes against the grain of the materialistic society. If you do something great, you take credit. I am the doer because I did it. Hanumanji, it is explained when he was burning Lanka. You can imagine, Sugriv sent his army in four directions. You could find in north, you could find in south, you could find in east, you could find in west also. Go and find. They were divided into four groups. And the suspected direction was the south, where Sita would be there. So there Hanumanji was sent. The confidence was placed in Hanumanji. Hanumanji went along with Angada, who was the head of the party. Jambavan, some of the best monkeys were in that party. And Hanumanji was one of the members of the party. He was not the leader. And he go up to certain area. Then nobody can move further. And they choose Hanumanji, you are the only one we can go. Just imagine. Then Hanumanji goes. He crosses the ocean. A great achievement. Crossing the ocean is a great achievement. And after crossing the ocean, he goes around looking for Mother Sita. Then it's like a scientist trying to find some invention. And he finds Mother Sita. Not only finds Mother Sita, he gives her the assurance of Ram's coming to Lanka and killing Ravan. A second success. And who is doing? Alone. The whole party is on the other side of the ocean. You can imagine how much the Ishwari Bhav would come rise. And then he goes and destroys the Ashoka Vatika. And not only destroys the Ashoka Vatika, he kills Ravana's son, Akshay Kumar. And not only that, when the Brahmastra is released, Brahmastra is not able to do anything to him. What does Hanumanji do? Surrenders to Brahmastra. He said, okay, you bind me. No. Every step of success can lead to greater level of pride. That's what usually happens to human being. Success brings pride and the concept of I am doer, and failure brings the concept of envy and depression. I am not the doer. Both are false ego. One is the puffed up false ego and one is depressed false ego. And now then Hanumanji, what does he do? He meets Ravan, gives him the message, angers Ravan, that's what he came to do. And when Ravan asked to burn his tail, Hanumanji's tail does not burn. The fire had no power to burn Hanumanji. It was never heard before. Nothing happened. Rather than not happening anything, Hanumanji used that fire to burn the entire city of Lanka. Another achievement. Just see, at every step, the success rate is you know, 100%, the condensed 100%. Not even one fault in that. But how does Hanumanji do it? Very amazing. Valmiki says, when Hanumanji was burning the Lanka, he was continuously saying, Dasom Kosalendrasya. I am the servant of Lord Ram. I am the insignificant servant of Ram. He told Mother Sita also, I am the most insignificant servant of Sugriv. Who do you think Master senses? The Master sends the most insignificant pune to come and give the message. Not his best commander. I am the most insignificant. If I can achieve, what to speak of other monkeys? They can easily do it. He was not simply talking to assure Mother Sita. Rather, there was a conviction of Hanumanji that all other monkeys are better than me. How can you do this? How can someone combine the principle of unlimited success and understanding one's constitutional position that I am not the doer? That is Vedic philosophy. Vedic philosophy doesn't mean that I am not the doer means you don't do anything and you go to Siddhivinayak temple and extend your hand, offer 2 rupees garland and expect unlimited thing. That is not Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means there is limitless action, not for oneself, for the service of the Lord. In what consciousness? I am not the doer. I am the servant of Ram. This is a totally different concept. And how does Ram say? Lord Ram, who is the Supreme Personality of God, and he gives credits to Hanumanji. You are the doer. You did it. So the Supreme Personality of God, when we say he doesn't have any, he is not affected by three modes of material nature, means even though he is the doer, he is Upadrishta, Anumanta, Bharta, Bhokta. Just imagine the position of God. If I and you were to be made God, can you imagine what will happen? We will not function only. We'll be floating in the air, screaming, I am God. People are calling themselves God when they are not God. Going crazy. What to speak of when they are made God? When there is some resemblance of being some power, there is so much of ego. Therefore, God can only handle the position of God. Why? Because he never thinks he is God. In the Bhagavatam, we don't find Krishna calling himself all the time, I am God. He calls himself as God when there is a need for Indra to learn the lesson. When there is a need for Brahma to learn the lesson. When Arjuna needs to learn the lesson. With great embarrassment, Krishna may say, no, everything comes from me. Aham sarvasya prabhu matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante ma buddha bhava samanvita. And then after speaking all that, he is willing to ride the chariot of Arjuna. Where should I take? Take here. Take there. This side. That side. How can God do this? You ask some CEO of some company, ask him to drive the driver's car. He will not be able to do it. He'll be offended. A CEO would never drive a scooter of the driver. And who is Arjun? Arjun is the most insignificant entity compared to the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Arjun had the guts to say, Senayarubhar madde ratam sthapayame achyuta. He said, my dear Lord, take my chariot between the two armies. I want to see who has come to fight with me. And what does the chariot driver do? He takes the chariot. Can anyone be as humble as Krishna? Is it possible? Same Krishna, when he came as Vamandev, he captured Bali Maharaj. He proved his power. He just touched the entire creation with just mere 3 steps of land. And he placed his foot on the head of Bali Maharaj, sent him to Patal, and then he asked him, what should I do for you? He said, I'll become your gatekeeper. The same Lord stands as the gatekeeper of someone who is not even a proper... He was born in a demonic family. And Krishna stood there. How long? Forever. Forever he is guarding the gates of his devotee. Therefore the whole concept of power and prestige does not exist in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It does not exist. There is no hankering. There is no lamentation. Similarly, one who follows the path of the Supreme Lord, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, like the Pandavas, did they fight in the mode of passion? Did they fight in the mode of ignorance? Yes, they used the power, their archery power, their mace power, for what? For only one purpose, to please the Supreme Lord. And how do they do it? Usually when you are successful in something, you take credit. I did study like this, I did this, I did that. You never see someone who comes first rank. He doesn't say, because of my previous punya, I got this rank. And what is the achievement? You get a rank in the Maharashtra state among few lakh people. And what is Arjuna's credibility? Arjuna's credibility of being a best of the archer amongst millions of princes. And then what does he do when he is killing his opponent? He doesn't say that my bow and arrow are so super, so powerful. He says, if I have done any good karma, if I have treated the elders respectfully, I have done service to my guru properly, then by the power of that piety, let this arrow kill my opponent. So the arrow is not important. The principle of goodness is important. Lakshman, who is he? He is the expansion. He is the Lord himself. He is Adishesh, who is carrying the entire burden of the entire creation. He can handle the Lord, who is Virat, unlimited power, and he can lie on Sheshanags, and Sheshanag can easily handle. So when he is fighting with Meghanath, one who makes sound like a rumbling cloud without any power, in the Ravana's son, the same thing. Lakshman says that if I've acted properly, he said, let this arrow, which is nothing but the power of Ram, kill my opponent, not me. Therefore, whole psychology of someone who understands the principle of Vedic literature, practices spirituality, practices God consciousness, or for that matter we call it Krishna consciousness, then he may be unlimitedly empowered and powerful, but his mentality, his consciousness, the whole thing is not what is important is not what you are able to do and what you are not able to do. That is not important. What is important is, when you do something such wonderful act, where do you give the credit? Where does the credit go for? If you are in the mode of goodness, you give the credit for whom? You give the credit for your like Parikshit Maharaj, again we see, when Shukadeva Goswami came, who is Shukadeva Goswami? He would not come to anybody's house more than where someone would milk the cow. For a glass of a milk he would stay and then walk. Nobody could catch him. He was such an independent sadhu moving around. Seeing the conviction of Parikshit Maharaj, who was sitting, fasting till death, because he was cursed to die within 7 days, he was waiting, I'm going to die within 7 days, let me hear Harikatha. And hearing Parikshit Maharaj's conviction, that dragged Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. He came there, I want to speak to him, he's such a qualified person. And comes there to speak Harikatha to Parikshit Maharaj. What does Parikshit Maharaj say? Parikshit Maharaj says, that who am I? If you see, Parikshit Maharaj, in one sense, a greater devotee than the Pandavas. In the Bhagavatam, ruled for 60 years. Yudhishthira Maharaj ruled for only 36 years. Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna in the womb of his mother. Pandavas saw Krishna first time when they met Krishna during the marriage with Draupadi. That was the first time they saw. But Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna, where Krishna came to the womb of his mother. That was his first interaction with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when Parikshit Maharaj, what does he say? He said, I am not a devotee. I am not a good person. I am nobody. All these great sages, Shukadeva Goswami has come to me, not because my greatness, because I am connected to the Pandavas. That is my good fortune. Therefore, the whole process of spirituality, the whole culture of living in this world is not based upon creating more and more resources. That can never be possible. However much one tries to create more and more resources and to provide everybody equally, oh, these resources, if we can distribute it, you know, create more resources and give it to everybody, that is not going to solve the problem. You can build hundreds of ceilings. You'll have nano cars and super nano cars, whatever. That is not going to satisfy. Because the mode of passion is not minimized. Rather, the mode of passion is increased. When the mode of passion increases, what is the vibration around everywhere? Hankering and lamentation. I want. When the world is filled with this vibration, I want, then what will happen? Those vibrations will conflict. There will be conflict. There will be a struggle to supremacy. And if there is a supremacy, there is a fear for losing that supremacy. Vidura told this to Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra one day called Vidura. And he said, my dear Vidura, I am not getting sleep. This was not a modern problem. This was there 5,000 years ago. And there's only one Dhritarashtra and his sons. And he said, I can't sleep. And what did Vidura say? Okay, I'll go and buy some medicine for you. He asked him few questions. He said, my dear brother, he said, are you hankering for somebody else's property to make others' property your property? Have you performed some violence to others, which he had done? He tried to kill the Pandavas. And then he made one comment to Dhritarashtra. He said, my dear Dhritarashtra, such people will never sleep. And remember one more point he said. He said, if you have some item or something which you want to achieve, the first stage is there is a hankering. At the stage of hankering, there is no sleep. You don't sleep. When you get that item, when you get that object of your desired object, there is a fear of losing it. My God, I may lose it. That time also you don't sleep. And when you lose it, then also you don't sleep. So where is the time you sleep? You don't sleep when you want it. You don't sleep when you have it. You don't sleep when you lose it. Why? Because the mode of passion's very core nature is to cause you lamentation, hankering and fear. In between hankering and lamentation, there is a fear when that item, when that thing is there with you. Mode of goodness, what is mode of goodness does? That you don't hanker. When you don't hanker, you don't gain it. When you don't gain it, there is no fear of losing it. And even if you lose it, you are content. At least I used it. So therefore, a person in the mode of goodness, what does he do? He always sees. I remember one very highly educated person when we were traveling. You know, he committed suicide. And what was his background? His background was, he was studied in one of the most prestigious university. For that kind of education, people will commit suicide. And he had that education. He had that education. He had done his master's from one of the best universities in America. And he committed suicide. Why? Because he was not able to see, you know, the people who are not having it. He could have been always be grateful. Oh Lord, you have given me so much. But he was not able to see. He was seeing those who were better than him. Mode of passion, longing and desire. And I told that story. I couldn't complete. That teacher in Krishnanagar, he had many students studying under him. And what was he living with? Little rice and tamarind leaves. And the king of Krishnagar would come and ask him, okay, take this. He said, I don't need. It's not my requirement. I don't need them. He said, I have this tamarind tree. The leaves fall. I don't need to climb the tree also. And then I soak it in the rice. I boil the rice. I add some salt. Then I don't need to cook some dal also. Everything is, my nourishment is met with by eating this rice. One may say, come on, this is too much. Because of this only India is not progressing. Because of this mentality. What is the mentality? The contentment mentality is called as laziness. And the hankering and longing mentality is called as progressive. As I said, you know that story for Mother Mary or Mother Kunti, for Draupadi, when they conceived, Surya said, you will not be considered as sin. You will not perform sinful activity. When the mentality changes, you know, that I want to sin. Then what can you do to such a person? Therefore, Krishna very systematically presents the three modes of material nature. Even though the actions of the Pandavas and the Kurus are the same, what is it? Battling. The war is going to take place. So one cannot say the battle of Kurukshetra was fought between the people who are actively in the mode of passion. The Pandavas were in the mode of passion. The Kurus were in the mode of passion. Because of that hankering and lamentation of two parties, the two conflicting parties, 18 Akshoyini Sainya was destroyed. No, one cannot judge based upon the action. The Pandavas were rightful to claim and the Kurus were unjust, sinful. They had unlimited hankering and they wanted to have throne and the Pandavas did not. Bhima wanted to walk away. Arjuna wanted to walk away. Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to walk away. The problem with the Pandavas was too much of mode of goodness. Too much amount of goodness. For establishing dharma, to rule the country, there has to be a tinge of passion also. The mode of passion is required. And they didn't have any passion. They could have stayed in the forest without any trouble for the rest of their life. Because they are happy. Just see, when Yudhishthira Maharaj was sent to the forest for 14-year exile, how did he take it? There is Adi Parva, that is the first part of Mahabharata. Then there is Sabha Parva. Sabha Parva is nothing but description of amazing palaces, buildings. What Mayadana built for the Pandavas, what some, you know, people built for the Kurus, that gambling match, that hall for gambling match was an amazing. All the casinos you put together in Las Vegas, they seem to be very insignificant. That one palace what they built for gambling match was so huge. It was 8 miles wide. I don't know, the biggest stadium where people go and watch football match or cricket match can occupy 3-4 lakh people. So it was much, 8 miles wide in the round circle. And the gambling match was taking place in the middle. And everybody could see also. When Shakuni would throw the dice, they could see the number also, which number is going to fall. Everybody had the access to see. Everybody could able to hear. That kind of hall was built. So Sabha Parva is nothing but a lot of description of different halls. The Indra's hall, the Chandra's hall, the hall of Vidyadharas, the Charanas. After being in such hall, better than all this hall was Mayadana built the hall for the Pandavas. And from there, they are directly into the forest. Vana Parva. That is called as Vana Parva. Just imagine from living in a palace to Vana, what will you do? You'll commit suicide. When the electricity went in New York for a few minutes, a lot of craziness increased. Because then they never experienced electricity going. But here Pandavas, when they're thrown out to the forest and Yudhishthira Maharaj is walking, only regret he had for being in the forest was that I can't feed the students. I cannot sponsor their education. I cannot provide them food. That was the only one lamentation he had. But what was his satisfaction? His satisfaction was, where will we get to meet so many sadhus and where will we get to visit the tirthas? So Vana Parva includes description of many tirthas, the holy places and the holy rivers. Thousands of holy places and thousands of holy rivers and plus meeting so many sadhus. In Vana Parva only they hear Ramayana, In one hour only they hear the story of Nala Damayanti. So because they are absorbed in the mode of goodness, which was connected to Krishna, the sattva, Shuddha Sattva, therefore their banishment was nothing but visiting Yatra, 14-year Yatra. Who has done Yatra? We go for 10 days Yatra. It was a 14-year Yatra and meeting so many sadhus. How many sadhus can we travel with? 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, they were traveling with so many sadhus. Here comes the famous Markandeya Rishi. And who is he? Markandeya Rishi is not a devotee for 20 years. People feel, oh, I know I met this devotee, he is devotee for so many years practicing. Markandeya Rishi has no age only, limitless. He is ageless. And what is his experience? Markandeya's experience is that he had experienced the annihilation. How does annihilation take place? And he is narrating to the Pandavas. And they meet that sadhu. The sadhu who, what was his name, who had long life? Lomash Rishi. I think he gave Yudhishthira Maharaj the ability of, you know, he gave him the ability to become expert in gambling match. And then some other sages told him the story of Nala Damayanti. Then he meets Yaksha, who is none other than Yamaraj. Then in that 14 years exile, you know, Arjuna, when they were kings, Arjuna, because he came in the middle of the house when Draupadi was alone with the Yudhishthira Maharaj, then he went for Parikrama, 5 years. And where did his Parikrama lead to? Went to Kailash, went to Indralok. So their banishment was also nothing but a kind of Tirth Yatra only. Why? Not because it became Tirth Yatra because it was Tirth Yatra, because the Tirtha was sitting in their head. And on the other hand, when the Pandavas were banished, Duryodhana had occupied the throne illegally, but he was thinking what the Pandavas must be doing. Just see. The throne is there, but he was thinking about the Pandavas. And whenever they would receive the news, the Pandavas have killed the Kirmira demon. They have killed Hidamba. They have killed this demon. They have killed that demon. They got the Akshayapatra. They are in the forest and they are in the palace. The Pandavas are satisfied being in the forest and the Kurus are totally dissatisfied being in the palace. So what gives satisfaction? Is it the palace or the forest? It is the mind. Therefore, Krishna, we discussed this in our Gita seminars, that the principle of satisfaction comes by controlling the inner surrounding. When the inner surrounding, that means where there is a control over mode of passion, the hankering is not there. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, when he gave sannyas to one devotee, he asked, Prabhupada, what is the duty of a sannyasi? He said, a duty of a sannyasi, a renunciate, when he goes to some rich grihastha's house, he should not lament, oh, I could have had a very nice house. I don't know why I'm staying in the Brahmacharya ashram with 140 people. He said, he should not lament. He told that is the first principle. No lamentation. When somebody takes to the path of Krishna consciousness, there is no question of regret. I wasted my time. That means you never practice devotional life. Because spiritual life is there to make us completely content, happy and satisfied. Why? Because the mode of goodness becomes prominent. So when we understand this, wherein Krishna is speaking to Arjun and Prabhupada is writing in his commentary, that this hard struggle for existence is nothing but another name for this is mode of passion. So when you see that Indians don't win the gold medal, that's a good fortune. Why? Because that is not the culture. There will be no competitions. Where is it? There is no competition. Rather, they are offering. Shibi Maharaj is willing to satisfy a bird, a pigeon. By what? By cutting the flesh of his body. Dadichi Maharaj is willing to give his entire body so that the demigods can have a weapon. And Rantidev is willing to lay down his life to feed some chandalas. This is Vedic culture. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wrote a book on Gyan, on Nyaya. And it could have been a masterpiece. He wrote it. But one of his friends realized, he also had written book on Nyaya and he gave it to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No, before that Lord Chaitanya gave it to him. Look, I have written something on Nyaya. And when that student read, his face became pale. Mahaprabhu asked him, what happened? He said, you have written a book on Nyaya. Who will read my book? I have written a book, but who will read? Your compilation is too brilliant. Lord Chaitanya took that book and easily threw it in the Ganga. I said, let your book become famous. That is Indian culture. So how can there be achievements and gold medals and silver medals? You know, threw in the river. And we see, the modern civilization, one paper you present, like our Gaurang Priya was saying, in the medical colleges sometime, in all colleges it happens, steal somebody else's notebook. That's what modern education can offer. Highly qualified in education, but there is so much of envy, there is so much of fear, there is so much of frustration, there is so much of scheming, there is so much of backbiting. What does it do? The mode of passion. You have got big, big degrees, but what does it do? It causes unlimited anxiety. Therefore, from Krishna's point of view, from the Lord's point of view, one who has created this material world, he would want that I need people with unlimited perfectionists, with unlimited achievers. He could say that. This is my world, I want such and such people. But what does he expect? He expects that you come to this world because of your own, you know, background. But use this world like a springboard. Nobody makes a house on the springboard. What is the springboard? Utility of a springboard? The utility of the springboard is that you jump once, twice, and thrice, and go off the springboard, dive into the water of the nectarian ocean of devotional service. It's not meant to be there. You have to jump off that springboard. So material world is like a springboard. And sattva-guna springs are limitless. You know, one jump, you go back to the spiritual world with devotional service. The mode of passion springboard, lot of springs are there, but what happens, you jump high and collapse down to the ground. Constantly go up and down. And the tamogun springboard, there is no spring only, you just lie there. Therefore Prabhupada explains that mode of goodness means happiness, mode of passion means action, which will have bad reaction most of the time, and mode of ignorance means helplessness. Therefore I'll conclude, our Shyamananda was talking to one person. He defined mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. He was a simple, ordinary worker. And he was explaining how you can never be satisfied. It is not the less salary is causing you disturbance. Tell me, how much money, after making how much money you will feel satisfied? 10,000 rupees? 20,000 rupees? Haan, 20 milega to achha rahega. But your boss has 20,000. But he is not happy. Haan, wo bhi sahi hai. Then he gave the example. He said this material world is like a prison house. And then, just imagine, you know, if you have the choice, the police comes and he has got three chains. A chain made from gold, a chain made from silver, and a chain made from iron. Which one would you choose to be bound? He said, gold chain. He didn't understand the logic only. What is the nature of chain? The nature of chain is to bind you. Whether you are tied with a gold chain, whether you are tied with a silver chain, whether you are tied with an iron chain, you are tied. That is the principle. It is not that because I am tied with golden chain, tight, harder. No. Your activities are restricted. You may look at the gold chain, but what is the utility? What is it? It's a binding chain. So mode of goodness is like a golden chain. Mode of passion is like a silver chain. And mode of ignorance is like a iron chain. But what is it? It's a chain. What does it do? It binds you. But the mode of goodness is better. From that platform, one can go to the higher platform of na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vam jagadish kamaye. Then my Lord, I come to temple for what? I come to learn to love you. The principle of love you has to be utilized. But in this world, wherever I utilize that principle, I am exploited. My desires are not fulfilled. It is only one way love, like Ravan's towards Sita. It only brings death. It only brings disaster. But Hanumanji's love for Ram is what? Is two way. When Hanumanji came back to Kishkinda, bringing the message to Ram, Ram said, I have nothing to offer. I am ashamed. You have done such an amazing service to me. And what can I do? I can simply embrace you. And by embracing you, my dear Hanumanji, I remain eternally indebted to you. I cannot repay. Lord is telling to ordinary monkey. And then after the whole pastime was over, they came back to Ayodhya. Lord Ram offered a nice garland and gave it to Mother Sita. And he gave 7 qualities. He said, those who have the 7 qualities, you offer this garland. And what Mother Sita did? She gave it to Hanumanji. And what Hanumanji did? He broke it into pieces. And everybody was looking. They felt monkey to hi karega. After all, however, he's a monkey only. That was their wrong conclusion. He was breaking and he was biting it and breaking it. What was he looking there? He did not serve Ram looking for mujhe wo moti ki mala milegi. He broke it and he was looking for his Ram. And he couldn't find and he would throw it. Another one, he would throw it. Another one, he would throw it. And Sita was shocked. Apparently. And then he said, I'm looking for my Ram. Then he broke open his chest and he showed everybody, here is the Ram. Therefore, when we come to temple, especially the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, here Krishna is not standing. He is not holding a blessing hand. That you'll find in another temple. No, hand. You'll get this, you'll get that. But you're standing here with a flute. And he's saying, bring your murdanga and tabla and play with me. No, I got a flute and you get another instrument. And let us perform the eternal pastime of a divine music. Of chanting the holy names. And associating with the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world with no other desire other than giving pleasure to Him. And in doing that, we transcend all the modes of material nature. So we strongly recommend that if you read this 14th and 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, then you understand that why you are not happy, and you are happy, why you are happy. And if you don't know between these two, not happy or happy, confused, that also will come to know. The 14th and 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the 18th chapter, entire 18th chapter, when the principle of three modes of material nature are very nicely analyzed. That's a special gift of the Lord. You don't find in many scriptures the concept of three modes of material nature as much as we find in the Bhagavad Gita. It's a special contribution. It's like one of the best diagnostic center. NM Center, Metropolis, and this and that. You know. But here, there's three modes of material nature. Analyzing the three modes of material nature, immediately you are analyzed. Where do I stand? How much blood is there of mode of passion? How much blood is there mode of goodness? How much blood is there mode of ignorance? How much satisfaction is there? How much satisfaction is not there? Very clear indication you get to know. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.